Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 30th day of May, Anno Domini 2020. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. And if you're on the line, stay on the line. We'll get to you shortly. If you're not on the line, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Germany's Federal Cybersecurity Agency, BSI, and I won't try to pronounce the name, has issued a warning urging all iOS users to install Apple's latest security updates, which patch 2 zero-click security vulnerabilities that impact the company's default mail app. The vulnerabilities were first discovered by the U.S.-based security firm ZecOps, which I can pronounce, which found that they were being actively exploited in attacks targeting iOS users since at least January of 2018. Apple has acknowledged the security flaws, though the company says it's found no evidence they were used against customers. And I don't know who was using them, they were using against them. And its warning, BSI stressed the importance of installing the updates immediately. Both of the security flaws affecting Apple's mail app are no-click vulnerabilities, which result from a memory consumption issue that 99.9% of every problem we have is a memory consumption, is a memory issue of some sort.
Don't we all suffer from that?
Some of us more than others. They're no-click vulnerabilities which result from a memory consumption issue, and they can be triggered after the app processes a maliciously crafted menu. Fortunately, Apple addressed the flaws in the new release of iOS 13.5 and iPadOS 13.5, which offer improved memory handling and bounds checking. The vulnerabilities affect iPhone 6S and later, iPad Air 2 and later, iPad Mini 4 and later, and the iPod Touch 7th generation. In a blog post, ZecOps explained, explained how a nation-state threat operator leveraged the vulnerabilities to attack high-profile targets. While high-profile targets are the most at risk, it is still highly recommended that all iOS users install Apple's latest security updates to avoid falling victim to any potential attacks that exploit the two vulnerabilities. Because remember, computers don't care. When somebody programs a computer to send out 100 bazillion exploits, it doesn't care if you're a nation state or just some schmuck with an iPhone. They'll get you. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is iOS mail has critical security flaws. Your choices are, I've already updated, I'll update immediately, going commando, baby, Apple, and others. So far, we've got 24 votes, and Apple is way ahead of all the others. And of course, if you have more to say about this, go over to our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forums. And second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least the number one item under poll discussion is 30 May 20. iOS mail has critical security flaws. And of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
And don't think you're invulnerable or not a target because you don't have anything worth stealing. You have an identity, you have a phone, you have obscurity for the bad guy who can use your name to steal things.
And like I said, they don't care who they infect. They're not specifically targeting anybody. Nope. They just shoot out 100 billion of these.
Anybody and everybody's fair game.
That's exactly right. I suspect that some of the suspicious-looking emails that I've gotten are this. only I don't have an iPhone or an iPad, so they don't affect me, but I've still gotten them.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because I'm targeted? No, because I'm an address in somebody's list.
Yep.
That's all it needs to be.
And that's how you can get some of these other junk mails, because your name appeared on somebody else's computer that doesn't do a good job of, you know, running malware, spyware, and all that other stuff to keep them safe. So their email address, that's all it takes, is an email address. Something innocent, folks. You might think, oh, it's only email addresses. Yeah, but what happens is now your whole email address, say it's 300 people, now are also going to get that stupid notice.
Yep.
And passed around, and who knows, hacked maybe their email address.
One of the things I like is that some email companies, including Gmail, have what's called plus addressing. So my email address is asknick@gmail.com. Go ahead and email me. I can ignore it. But when I sign up for something, let's say I signed up for OmniCorp, something from a company called OmniCorp, I can say my email address is asknick+OmniCorp@gmail.com.
Getting one of those Ed 209s?
Exactly. I saw that the other day.
Yeah.
It's great. It was some sort of synchrony because somebody had been talking about RoboCop, and then I saw a YouTube video that referenced RoboCop, and then RoboCop was on television. The point is, I can say asknick+OmniCorp@gmail.com. It still comes to me, but now I see where it came from, you know, who sold my address.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that a lot. Gmail does it, a couple of others do it. And the easiest way to tell whether yours does it or not is send yourself an email using that plus addressing. Obviously, no spaces. asknick+whatever@gmail.com.
Now, is that the word plus or the...
No, the actual symbol.
The plus sign.
The symbol. Right, yep. Right.
Just to clarify for our listeners. Yeah.
You can also use a dot or a period as a name separator. So, Stephen.Ray, so it looks differently. And the periods are ignored. So you can use those if you want to separate. A lot of people for a long time were using underscores to make two separate words. But that's annoying to have to tell people your address. In fact, our company address, mac-av.com, because mac-av.com was already taken by a French company and we couldn't get it back. So we actually, during this time of crisis, we got a new domain, not the applestore.com.
Nice. Really nice. That's excellent.
Well, it denotes you differently from the actual Apple.
We've had people that are bringing their machines in. They go to the closed mall and then call us, because we say call us from the parking lot to make sure there's not too many people in the store.
Right.
They'll call us from the mall parking lot and ask what door to go in, and you know, the front door, and then they say they can't find us. where are you? I don't see your car in our parking lot.
Yeah, right.
They went to the mall.
They went to the mall. By the way, I'd forgotten that you had done this.
Oh, yeah.
It's hysterical.
Bonus points for anyone that knows the center square.
It's the center square on the YouTube stream. It's very funny. At any rate, I've completely, because I was so busy doing other things, I didn't write down who's on the phone.
Alan from Webster.
Alan from Webster. Thank you. Hi, Alan. What's up?
Hi. Thanks for doing the show, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an Android phone problem. And so let me state the problem, then I'll fill in some details. What's happening is my storage card, my SD card, is getting corrupted every day.
Yeah.
Right? So I talked to you guys back in November, and the phone is a Moto G6. It was upgraded to Android 9. I've had it since July of 2018, and it lasted a week and then broke, and Verizon gave me a new one. My wife has the same model phone. So what happens, back in November, I had the memory card formatted as an internal one. You guys told me I shouldn't do that, so I got a new card, and I put it in. And then around March, it got corrupted. If I pop out the card and I take it over my desktop, I can recover the card. The file system was corrupted. And then it lasted about 2 months. Then it lasted about 2 weeks, and now it only lasts a day. So my question is, do you have any thoughts about what should I do?
Yeah, one of two things. First, I don't understand why they told you you shouldn't have it an internal card. I don't get that at all.
No. It is internal memory. On the Moto 6, you can make internal. I only have 32 gigabytes, and I thought I would have more apps. I'm only using about 18 gigs on apps. So I have about 40, 50 gigs of music and photos, so it's okay.
Right. The other thing is I have never had a G6, but I've also not heard of any real trouble with them.
Yep.
But it could just very easily be a bad card.
Or a bad card reader in the phone.
It could be.
Okay, so when I called you guys before, that card was, I couldn't recover that card, and I put a new, I went from a SanDisk to a Samsung Evo card. All right?
Okay.
And I can still read the card in the desktop. When I put it in my micro disk reader, I can read it and fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And now when I put, another part is if I take a photo with the camera, it becomes corrupted almost immediately now. Or if I take photos or a document and I transfer it to the card, it becomes corrupted almost immediately. The other stuff on there is still okay, the older stuff.
One of the things, just out of curiosity, because you said your wife has the same phone?
Yep.
What would happen if you take, say, the card out of hers, back it up to your computer, and switch cards? See if hers can read yours.
Hers is formatted as internal memory still. I haven't changed that over, so I'd be reluctant to screw up her phone.
Yeah, I get it.
You don't want to sleep with your eyes open?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, then, to me, it's sounding like there's some still issue with the phone. It's corrupting you. For it to sit there and corrupt, now there's no other updates that are available for the phone?
I checked the camera, and I updated the camera app, and I put another camera app. I got rid of the viewer and put a new viewer on. I don't think there's any update to the phone. I checked all that.
Check also to see if you've got any, because one of the things Motorola does is add a lot of bloatware. See if there's anything running that you don't really need that may be affecting the card.
I've taken most of that stuff off.
Okay, then in that case, it really is either a bad card, because cards go bad, or it's a bad reader in the card. And the only way you'll be able to tell that is by trying a different card.
Well, I have another card that I use for my DSLR that I could put on there and try that.
Yeah,
right?
it can't hurt to try it and see what happens. Like I said, it could be the card. It could be the reader itself, as Steve said.
Okay, because the rest of the phone is fine.
Yep.
I haven't tried storing pictures that I take with the camera on the internal memory yet. But if it's the phone, is it a new phone time?
Yep.
It might just be.
If it's not under warranty, check up about what a non-warranty repair would cost versus getting a new phone.
Well, this is a $240 phone. It's 2 years old.
Yeah. Go with a Pixel.
I looked at new phones, and the Pixel 3a doesn't allow for another card to be put in, right?
You just save it up to the cloud.
That's how a lot of phones are going, but some of them still have a card slot.
I transfer pictures from my digital SLR camera onto my phone. Okay,
Yeah, you're going to find fewer and fewer phones that allow a...
most of them are going to cloud service because, it's free.
Yep.
And it's unlimited.
Well, I do put my photos on here, and then they go to Google, right? The only ones I'm really interested on are I do take a few photos with the camera phone for convenience. Rather than make a note, it's easier to take a picture.
Yeah, sure.
Right? But that's not getting stored on Google Photos now because it gets corrupted too quick.
Right, because it's getting corrupted on your card.
Yep.
Right. Right.
Uh-huh.
Right. Yeah, I get that. Well, okay.
I think you're going to have to try another card, see if it corrupts it. Then otherwise, maybe it's time for a new phone.
Yeah, it's pretty much where you're
I mean,
you're
you can get a cheap one. I mean,
well, I do. The Moto 6G is cheap.
No, right? What I'm saying, as far as cheap, you don't have to go for like a 16 or 32 gig. If you can find a good deal, say on a 4 gig or 8 gig, you know, don't spend a lot of money just so you can try a couple pictures and see if it does it.
Okay. Well, yeah.
But also,
the one
don't
that
forget.
Kind of meets my need is my is like a Moto G. They don't call them 8 now. They're Power.
Yeah.
And do you have any opinion on buying it unlocked versus buying it like from Verizon?
I know people who bought the unlocked ones and they had not trouble, but a little bit of foo-frog getting it set up. It's just, but it can be done.
Yeah.
Either way, it can be done.
It's just your support. You know, this way, if you got an issue, trying to contact that support versus having Verizon right here in your back door.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've gone to Verizon for my wife's phone. I had to be rebooted once, and I couldn't figure that out. So, yeah.
There you go.
Also, the other thing to remember is you're right. You cannot add storage to the Pixel 3a, but it's 64 gig.
Right.
So,
you
know, you're in pretty good shape to begin with.
40 and music and pictures right now, and I haven't restored all my pictures that they had from the last time.
Right.
So I could fill up.
Well, look, I'm sorry. We kind of have to move on, but those are your choices, and thank you very much.
All right. Well, thanks for your input. Appreciate it.
Yep. Bye-bye. I hated to cut him off, but we've got at least two people hanging on, and we're going around in circles at this point. There's really, it's either a new phone or a new card, and try the card. And you know, cards are cheap. Buy a card, throw it in, see what happens.
We have seen over the years, especially in the early days with CDs, that some drives didn't like some brand of discs.
That's right.
He said he tried two different brands of cards. Both were pretty good cards, so that sort of points you back to the disc,
right?
The reader.
Right, I agree. But you know, spending a few bucks on an SD card, it's not like you're going to lose it. You can always use it for something else. Trying another card could solve the problem. If not, it's time for a new phone, and that's pretty much how it works. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. What's up, Ed?
Morning, guys. Although it seems like HP printers last forever. The ink actually does run out after a little while.
Yeah, it kind of does.
On the laser printers.
Yeah.
They run thousands of copies. But so I'm getting low. I have a couple of other HP toner cartridges that I can't use anymore. Is it possible to transfer the ink from one to the other?
It's not ink. It's a toner.
Toner particulates.
Right.
Yeah.
It's possible. It will be horribly messy. You have to drill a hole in both of them and try to pour this very, very fine powder out that is going to burst into a cloud around your desk. And
you'll get more in the air than you'll get
in your lungs than you'll
and in your lungs.
Yeah,
it's really not worth it. Just buy a new cartridge.
Okay.
Sorry.
Sounds like the thing to do.
Yep.
Okay, well, thanks. I thought I'd check.
Yep, sorry. Good luck.
A lot of people that have big copiers in their offices, there are a lot of the copiers will have a toner bottle that you have to pour the powdered toner into the reservoir, because technically that is cheaper than the whole cartridge system. But after your toner explodes all over the printer because you dropped something or you missed, and now you have to get a new $50,000 printer.
And throw away your clothes, because trust me, washing them... Everything. A, doesn't work, and B,
it ruins
the dishwasher. It ruins everything. The washing machine.
And all the other clothes in the washing machine, too.
Exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Karen from Brockport, New York. What's up, Karen?
Oh, not good today. I'll start off first by saying I'm a member and support what you're doing.
Thank you so much. It's what we love to hear.
And I have a big problem with my email access through Frontier. We are Frontier Internet customers, and I usually access my email with Thunderbird and my desktop computer. My mom is on the same account with a different email address, and she usually accesses email through Thunderbird and her laptop. We are both supposed to be able to access email through their Frontier webmail page. and I use the Yahoo Mail app on an Android cell phone and tablet. But as of yesterday, the only email we can do is my mother can still access the email on her laptop with Thunderbird, but I can't access mine at all. I tried to get help from someone at Frontier on their online chat. The only thing the help person said they could do was change my password. I didn't have them do that because they couldn't answer my question about having two different passwords, and that's a question of advice I guess I might need from you gentlemen. It was a while back, Frontier said if you wanted to use Thunderbird, you needed to get an application-specific password, which was a 20 or 25-character long random password. And I got help from someone at Frontier at that time, and we got it working for Thunderbird, and they gave me a generic password to use for the webmail page and the applications and the other devices.
Yeah, some email programs want more security than just a password because it's very easy to break into email. And so there are new systems that do the application-specific passwords. It does make it harder to set up your mail, but it does make it more secure so that other people can't get into your mail.
Two things we should say. There have been, over the past 24 hours, massive numbers of problems with Frontier Mail.
Okay.
And secondly, there are definitely outages here in the Rochester area, and that includes you.
Okay.
Out in Brockport. So it depends. Here's a weird thing. It depends on which server your email is on. Right.
Right.
So
you have no way of knowing that.
Right. But you and your mother, although you're both in the same house,
yes,
may well be on two different servers. Hers is working. Yours is not.
Most likely is.
Yeah.
Okay.
The older email addresses were probably on a Frontier-controlled server, and the newer ones are on the Yahoo server.
Well, we both have old email, like 20-plus years.
Well, the other thing you should check is whether you're getting your mail from Frontier itself or from Yahoo, and that depends on the servers that you're using.
In your Thunderbird setup.
Yeah. You should probably be using the Yahoo servers.
We have found that works. And that's why your phone and tablet work better using the Yahoo app, because Yahoo is handling the mail itself properly.
Right. So what happens is Frontier gets the request, sends it to Yahoo. Yahoo sends it back to Frontier. Frontier sends it to you.
Mm-hmm.
If you use Yahoo servers directly, it's you to Yahoo and back. So You eliminate that middle person, and there's less likelihood if Frontier is having issues, you've avoided them entirely.
Okay. Well, I thought maybe they were, because I had a couple instances on Thursday when my internet service went out completely, and I had to go and reset the Frontier modem box and my Wi-Fi.
Yeah. We have had and heard of continuous problems with Frontier email since they switched to the Yahoo back end. And the general suggestion is to get a different email address.
Yeah, right. I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, and
I've got some questions and want to ask for some advice from other people before I, you know, start doing that.
No, and I get it. And certainly if you've had the address for a while, it's your identity on the network. I get it. I absolutely get it. But the first thing you should do is make sure you're getting your email directly from Yahoo. All right. I'm afraid we got to take a break.
I posted a link to the server settings.
Perfect. So Karen will have those. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 30 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites. This is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 36 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites, and we have Larry from Rochester, New York on the line. Sup, Larry?
Good afternoon, guys.
Afternoon.
I've got another Apple question. My daughter's using a 2018 MacBook Air, and what she would like to do is connect two external speakers to the MacBook and run separate programs on those two external, excuse me, external monitors. I didn't mean to say speakers, external monitors. I know you can do it in desktop by just opening up consecutive desktops, but is it possible to do it on an external monitor?
Yeah, when you plug in an external monitor, you can choose whether you want it in mirrored mode, where it shows the same image, or in spanning mode, where it's one giant desktop. And you set that in the display system preference. Command F2 is the keyboard shortcut for switching back and forth. And so she can put any program she wants on any monitor she wants.
How many monitors can you connect to a...
As many as you have plug holes.
Okay.
Well, so
two is not a problem.
Yeah, it's got two Thunderbolts on the 2018 model. There's two Thunderbolt ports, so you can plug at least two displays in using either VGA or HDMI adapter. Some of the Airs also had an HDMI port. This one, I don't believe, is.
This one only has two ports on it. They're the USB-C ports. One says power, but I can assume you can do just about anything with it. I used to like it when Apple had more ports on them, but they only have the two now. So she has about three dongles that she starts plugging one up into the next, and then after a while, it almost gets confusing.
Yeah, yeah, I've got dongle onto my Mac. I've got four ports on my Mac, but they're all the Type C's.
Right,
right.
And so I still need a bunch of Type A cameras. They still aren't selling many cameras that have Type-C on it. Type-C has been the standard for a couple of years now. It's been available for probably 10 years. You need Type-A. So you can use a VGA adapter, HDMI adapter, on those two ports. If you get a strong enough hub, you can also run other monitors over USB as well.
Okay, so the couple of hubs we have now have their own power. And one of them we used was it pluggable, I believe the company is, and it has a couple of ports. So that's what we were really interested in. So there is the mirror, and then there is the spanning, I think.
It's basically the option is mirror or not mirror. So we had a spanning, or one giant desktop. Across both monitors. In fact, my adapter has two video ports on it, HDMI and VGA. So right now my computer thinks there's three monitors.
Even though you're only using one.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it.
There you go.
I think that's what we were looking for. I searched high and low last night, and the spanning for some reason didn't make sense to me. But I see what you're saying now. Because when you said it said one big screen, I was thinking, you said these puppies side by side, and they, kind of look like when you go in some places now, and they got the TVs together.
Right.
Yeah, big video wall. And then you can also use AirPlay. Yeah, if you have an Apple TV box, you can use AirPlay to make a wireless connection to another television as a monitor as well.
I see. So right now she's using Final Cut Pro, and she wanted to do something else with another monitor so she could look at something she was doing and then revert back to Final Cut Pro. So
That's very common for video editors to have your editing and timeline in one window, and then you might have a audio set up in another window. You've got your text script maybe in another window, and you have so many windows open that it's really nice to have multiple monitors.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's kind of what she was trying to do. Okay, that answered my question. She was there nuts yesterday, and of course she wasn't giving me a break either. So I'm going to go downstairs now and tell her to try this, and we'll see what happens.
All right, thanks.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Yep. Yeah, there's kind of an interesting trade-off between getting a desktop that has a big screen and a laptop which is portable. And they're about the same price for the same power.
That's exactly right.
So you sort of have that choice. So you end up getting a laptop for portability and then plugging another monitor into it when you need that bigger monitor.
Right.
And often ends up paying more than a single desktop might, but you have that portable option now.
Right. All right, our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
You're good. You?
I'm hanging in there. I just wanted to call. I said I had a unique problem with a friend of mine. His laptop somehow I think he corrupted the operating system doing something, because it wouldn't boot. It would go to the BIOS screen, and then it would go to boot the Windows, and it would just do it over and over again. And he said, well, I got to get my stuff off of there. I said, you don't have a backup? He goes, no. I go, So I was able to get in the BIOS, and I changed the boot order, and I booted off of a Linux Mint USB drive.
Yeah.
And I was able to access his files through that, rather than having to take apart that laptop and try and get that hard drive out of there. So I accessed all his records from there, copied them to another drive. Then we reformatted it and put Windows back on it. And then I checked his hard drive, and it all checked out to be okay. Didn't get any errors that I could see. But that's the only way I could find, without taking that computer apart, to get his files.
Right, right. Using what they call a live, they used to call it a live CD when it was CDs, yeah. But now it's a live USB.
Yeah.
Is a great way to A, play with another operating system like Linux, and B, do exactly what you did and rescue stuff. Luckily, the drive itself could still be read, even though it wasn't bootable.
Right.
It had been more badly corrupted, that trick would not have worked.
I think he went into something that he shouldn't have, and was tinkering around, and he deleted something.
Well, that's certainly a possibility. It happens much more often than people will admit to. But it could also be that when you reformatted it, the formatting blocked out some bad sectors.
Yeah, because I ran through Crystal Disk Info, and it all checked out so far.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so, but anyways, I was able to save his stuff, and then I handed him an extra hard drive I had, and I formatted it. I said, here, we're going to do your backups on this. Take this drive.
You're a good friend.
Yep. Yeah, and I loaded backup software for him, and now he's making backups.
Good.
But I told him, you know, this you're lucky.
Yeah, very lucky.
Because sometimes it's too far gone and you can't get anything back.
That's right.
Right.
We had like 3 computers this week people brought in to migrate to a new machine, and they were all dead. I said, please, before the computer breaks, get the new one. Then we can copy all your data. Where's your backup? What's a backup?
Yeah, right.
It's a good way to try to rescue something. I just, off the top of my head, remember when I loaded Mint on my old computer that I was able to see everything before I loaded it.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you.
Good job, Mark. Thanks.
Yep, thanks.
Yeah, we go ahead.
So we did run into a new security precaution on the Mac, part of the TPM module from Intel and all that we're using. It can be set so you cannot boot an external drive.
Right.
As a security layer.
Right.
Makes it hard when you're trying to troubleshoot a problem when you cannot boot an external drive.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you get into the TPM setup?
Yeah, Apple's got it set up so you can boot from an internet drive. So they have bootable OSs on the internet.
Oh, nice.
Which is really pretty cool that you can boot from the internet.
Well, it's Pixie booting and PXE. We've been doing that people have been doing that for a long time. And it used to be you really needed to be on a local network to do that. But now the internet has gotten so fast enough, and you can have a fast enough connection.
And it helps because people have lost their disks forever.
Oh, yeah, of course. 100 years ago.
Yeah. So about 10 years ago, Apple started doing with this internet boot with 10.7. And because that was the other thing, people, well, how do I erase my computer or how do I reinstall my OS? Well, put your original disks back in. Oh, I don't have those anymore.
Right. Right.
Invent a time machine, go back and find.
Exactly how it works. Yeah. Make those backups, people. We tell you this every week. You're rolling your eyes right now. Yeah, I know that. But how many of you are rolling your eyes and still don't have backups? Shame on you. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Jerry from SOTUS, New York. Hi, Jerry. What's up?
Hey, fellas. I need some recommendations.
Sure.
I got my government stimulus check for $1,200, and I'm trying to spend $400 on a laptop. I need to know if a 2-in-1 hybrid is good, or a Microsoft Surface tablet is better, or maybe even a Google Chromebook. Can you point me in the right direction?
What do you want to do with it first? What are you going to do with it?
Well, I mean, I go on Facebook, I check my email, and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. If you're not going to use any Microsoft-specific programs, you don't need to get a Surface tablet. And depending on which one you get, there have been issues recently with them anyway. If really, honestly, what you do is all web-based,
okay,
then a Chromebook will do everything you want it to do.
And not games. Not the interactive games.
The big high-end ones.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, hold on. My question, too, is the apps on Android cell phone, will they run on a Chromebook? Yes.
Oh, they will. On a Chromebook.
Right. I'm going with a Chromebook then, because it's $399, the one I like.
There you go.
I want to spend like $400 on one.
Right. A Chromebook will run Chrome OS apps, Android apps, and Linux programs.
Decent.
Now it depends on how much RAM you get. Obviously, on a 2 gig machine, you're not going to do a lot of that simultaneously. But on a 4 gig or 8 gig machine, you'll be able to run all of the. I'm running an 8 gig machine right now. I've got Linux app running. I've got a Chrome app running. Several tabs open. And
I'm
running.
I'm going to go with one like an Acer Book for $399.
There you go.
How much memory's in it?
Huh?
How much memory is in it?
8 gigabytes.
You got it.
There you go.
You know, there you go. All right. Thanks for helping me make my choice.
I appreciate it, guys.
Have a nice day.
You too. Have fun. You will find that unless you're doing something that specifically requires a very high-end machine, like a Mac, particularly if you're doing video and graphics and stuff, or you're using a program that's only available under Windows, if what you mostly do is web stuff and you don't play high-end games and things like that, a Chromebook will do everything you want it to do at generally less cost than other machines for a comparable quality machine. And you end up getting the best of three worlds, the Chrome OS, the Android apps, and the Linux stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a very good deal all the way around. All right, I wanted to, do we have anybody else waiting? No?
Nope. We're caught up.
I wanted to talk, I got to talk about this because it's great. Hot off the launch of an interchangeable camera system earlier this month, the Raspberry Pi is introducing a new configuration of the Pi 4, a model with a whopping 8 gigs of RAM. The newest highest-end config for the Pi 4 will run you, are you ready? $75.
That's expensive for a Pi.
It is expensive for a Pi.
Yeah, well, it's 8 gig of memory, though. Yeah.
It's the 8 gig version of the Raspberry Pi 4. It's long been rumored, thanks to Apple Raspberry Pi itself leaking the existence of an 8 gig model. The blog post reveals that an 8 gig model was always a possibility and says we were so enthusiastic about the idea that the non-existent product made its way into both the beginner's guide and the compliance leaflet. They actually put it in their guide without having the product. They were so excited about it. The Raspberry Pi 4 launched last year with a faster SoC or system on a chip, more RAM, dual micro HDMI, USB 3.0 support, a USB-C charging port. In addition to the usual server and hobbyist uses, Raspberry Pi promoted performance on a par with the entry-level x86 PC and dual monitor desktop uses. An 8 gigabyte option didn't exist at launch because there wasn't an 8 gigabyte LPDDR4 package compatible with the Pi 4 at that time. To accommodate the higher power demands of the new RAM package, Raspberry Pi says some changes to the board design needed to be made. The company says it shuffled the power supply components on the board, removing a switch mode power supply from the right-hand side of the board next to the USB 2.0 sockets and added a new switcher next to the USB-C power connector. The official Raspberry Pi Linux distribution, the Debian-based Raspbian, has typically only come in a 32-gig build, but if you actually want a program to address all 8 gigs of memory in the new Pi 4 config, you're going to need a 64-bit OS. For users who want to stick to the default distribution, Raspbian now comes in an early beta 64-bit image, but of course there are ways to put any version of Linux you want on it. without a problem. The Raspberry Pi Foundation has one more announcement. Raspbian isn't Raspbian anymore. We're now supposed to call it the Raspberry Pi OS. That's going to take some getting used to.
Yeah.
So, are you using a Raspberry Pi for what? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
One word of caution, though, to folks, if they're going to get them, make sure if you get the cases in there, folks, go the few bucks more and get a unit that has a fan.
Well, if you're going to get a Raspberry Pi 4, you must get an active cooling unit.
Yeah, you've got to have some type of fan unit on that because they do run hot. And if you try to run any length of time without it, they can overheat or get very hot.
Yep.
And cause issues. Just an FYI, because I've seen plenty of reports, you know, folks in my community, you know, are sitting there setting them up for different applications, DMR or whatever, and they're trying to use the fours, and they try to skimp.
Nope, do not skimp.
You can't. There's plenty of cases out there now. They even have an ultra-quiet fan unit on it, so it works great.
There's some really nice ones. We've put a link somewhere back in the system for some of that stuff.
Yep.
All right, back to the phones. Is this Christine?
Mm-hmm. Christine.
Yeah. Christine.
Hi there.
Hi, Christine. What's up?
Well, first time listener, and I am so glad I found you, and it won't be the last time.
Well, we're glad you found us too, Christine.
Yeah. A long time Lenovo, IBM to Lenovo user, and I finally had my laptop just go to pieces around December, and I finally got a Dell, which had a really good deal, really liked it, and I now have an external hard drive.
So
you've been talking about backing up, and my guy was like, yeah, you got to back it up. Okay. What is the best way for me to back up everything, because I'm not used to doing it, and I know I need to do it, and I also want to make sure I get email. So do you mind giving me a quick idea of the best way to do it?
Well, the big thing that I personally, and being in the business for many years, always encourage folks, don't worry about backing up the programs, because if anything happens to your system, you're going to have to do a reinstall of the operating system anyways. What you want to back up is any of your documents, folders, presentations, anything that you've created.
Pictures.
Word documents, spreadsheets, any of that stuff. Anything that if you go into your documents folder and it's in there, all that stuff you want to back up. So if you backed up, say, the user folder, that would, for the most part, gather anything else. Any of your banking stuff, if you say use Quicken and want to do that, any of the data. Data is what is irreplaceable if the machine dies.
So the trick there is whenever you save a file, make sure you save it into your documents folder.
Right.
That way you only need to back up that one place.
And the other thing, Christine, you asked about was mail. Who is your email provider?
A local ISP out of Ithaca.
Okay, you need to find out from them if you are doing POP or IMAP.
POP.
Okay, then you do need to back up your mail because what happens is with a POP provider, the mail comes down to you and is wiped off their machine.
Right.
What mail program are you using to read your mail?
Outlook.
Okay.
Outlook.
Yeah, where does Outlook save their mail?
So what you need to do is to add the Outlook mail saving folder to your backup. Now, as far as Steve is looking that up, in the meantime, I'll talk to you about a couple of other things. And Steve can put a link to this later, but if you go to asknick.com/backup.php, you will see my backup page and the things you need to know about backing up.
Okay.
And you will see for each of the operating systems, Windows, Mac, Linux, Android, and iOS, a number of backup programs, what they do, what they cost, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Depending on the on what you buy and what you pay for it, you will find that they are easier or harder to use, obviously. But one of the things you might look at is a product called pCloud. That's a cloud backup solution. The beauty of it is it's set and forget. Once you actually set it up correctly by pointing it at folders, say I want this folder, this folder, this folder, this folder backed up, they all go up to the cloud, and you never have to think about them again because every time you save something there, they get backed up. But whatever you use, you need to make sure that all the folders you care about, and as Dave and Steve said, 99% of what you do is it under on inside your user folder, that you know your name, you know, Windows/Christine or whatever it is. And that does 99% of them. But you need to make sure that you get the Outlook folder, which may be hidden.
It depends on what version it is. And I think in 2013 and later, they put it in your documents folder.
Perfect.
And before that, it's in your invisible profile folder.
Yeah.
So I'm posting a link.
And one word of suggestion. Down the road, you might want to look at maybe switching over to Gmail. The only reason I say that is because with Gmail, if your machine dies, you don't have to worry about any of that. And it's all right there on the Gmail server.
Because they use IMAP to store it at their end.
Which means they're storing it at their end, so you don't have to store it at your end. It also means that you can get the same mail on multiple devices. And it also means that if your device dies, that mail's still up there, and once you reconnect, it all comes back to you again.
And if you ever change internet providers, you'll be forced to change your email address.
So unless you're using Gmail.
So getting a Gmail address now, before you possibly switch, makes it much easier. It's harder to change your email address than it is to change your postal address.
Boy, that's the truth.
Yeah. Well, kind of like the lady who also called in from Brockport, I think, earlier. I've had this email address for over 20 years, and I love the company that I work with, and I really don't want to have to pay.
No, I get it. I get it. So backing up your email is important. I'm afraid that music tells me we got to go.
But okay, thanks, guys.
Thank you so much. We're going to take a slightly longer break. You've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense. But don't get excited because you've got another hour of it coming up. That's right. We're going to take a slightly longer break, but we'll be back with a whole nother hour of Dave Enright. Sadly, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, and a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you, right here on the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in just a few minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Holy cow, that must mean you're listening to Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Just like Ed did from Greece, New York. What's up, Ed?
Hi, gentlemen. I just wanted to ask for clarification sleeping at night type purposes. It's on my Samsung phone. My question is, if I've already got the Google toggle to back up everything and the same thing for the Samsung toggle to just automatically back up everything, Is that sufficient if something happens to the phone or, say, my Chromebook or something like that? My email is basically Yahoo. I do have a Gmail account, but it's a small one I never use, and I'm more concerned listening to your last caller and a couple of is that more pertaining to, like, Chromebooks or desktops rather than phones, if it's the same concept and procedure?
Yeah, so here's the deal. Check your email provider and make sure that it's IMAP, I-M-A-P, not POP3, P-O-P-3. If it's IMAP, then everything lives on their server, and you don't have to worry as much about backing it up. And that depends entirely on how you've set. If it's Gmail, that's always IMAP.
Gmail can also be POP. It depends on how you set up your mail reader.
Well, that's true. That's true.
IMAP is the default for both Yahoo and Gmail, but you can change it if you want.
Right. So make sure that they're both set up to be IMAP, and that takes care of your mail. As for your pictures.
And you can find it under settings?
Yeah, that'd be under settings. That's
about phone? Okay. IMAP.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not about the phone.
You could change it over to IMAP, you're saying?
Yeah. You want to change it over to IMAP if it's not.
In the mail settings.
In the mail settings. So instead of going to, say, it should be like imap.gmail.com as opposed to pop.gmail.com. You want to make sure it's IMAP. And the same with Yahoo. As for pictures, the easiest way to tell if they're being backed up is to log in to your web browser, go to Google Photos, and see if your photos are there.
Mm-hmm. And I know they're there. Yeah.
So great. Then they're definitely being backed up, and you're good to go.
Okay. After that last caller, I had a little anxiety, so I wanted to check it out with you. Okay, that's great. I appreciate that. Thanks for your help.
No, thank you.
Email and photos are the two biggest things that people always ask about.
You particularly know, on your phone.
You know, the new baby photos or grandchildren photos.
Right.
And we've had a couple of customers, data recovery on their phone generally takes about 3 months.
Yep.
And it's delayed with the current crisis because the recovery shops aren't running as fast. And fortunately for the one I was trying to finish up today, there are 40,000 photos, and it looks like they got them all back.
Wow. Nicely done.
And when I looked at the date on the backup folder, it was August of 2019.
I every once in a while get a little impatient. I'll take a picture, and then about a minute later, I think, I want to look at that on my computer, see it bigger. Mm-hmm. And it's not quite there yet. It does take a minute to get backed up, and particularly from my phone. So, yeah, I have to wait another minute maybe. But you will find that things are up there, and you're ahead of the game that way. And again, if you are looking to back up programs that are on your desktop, check out asknic.com/backup.php, and that will give you a number of programs for whatever your operating system is. Well, the top four, five. I don't.
Didn't expect the Spanish Inquisition.
Nobody expects Spanish Inquisition. And also a recommendation for pCloud, which I use. $175 for a lifetime at 500 gig, half a terabyte.
Well, what you got me hooked on, though, that I switched was to NPass.
I love NPass.
And I have been going through and changing so many passwords because I can now sit there and create even longer words, 56 or 65 characters long with all kinds of punctuations and everything else. And I just throw it in there and it automatically remembers. So if I go to a certain site, boom. No, it just pops it right in there for me. I've only got the one master password.
That's all you have to remember. And, of course, to bring it back around to what we were just talking about, if you set it up so that it saves it in your somewhere in the cloud.
That's where I put it. upon the
that
cloud.
Means that every one of your devices, very much like IMAP for email and Google Photos, NPass will then go to the cloud to find all your passwords, which are encrypted, which are completely encrypted.
Yep.
Bring it down, and it decrypts it with your password. So pick a decent password for NPass. And then it'll you can have those on anything. I've got them on my phone, my tablet, my desktop, my Chromebook, everywhere.
And you know how hard it is to type complicated passwords on that little tiny phone keyboard.
Well, that's the thing. You can also set it up to do a PIN number.
Yeah.
And I do that.
Here's what, though, where the downfall is. I have 42-character passwords, which is okay.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's not bad. But then every once in a while I forget. And so, for example, my Hulu password is 42 characters. And trying to type it into my television with the left, enough. Left, left, down, 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 right, right, right. Go over to the, now this is a symbol. This is a number. Butts. This is a letter. This is an uppercase letter. What a pain in the patoot. Luckily, only have to do it once per device. But that part is a pain. That part is a pain. But yeah, so if you're looking to back up, let me suggest you have, again, let me suggest you have multiple backups in multiple places. That means you've got one copy on your machine, one copy off your machine, whether that's then on a local separate drive that you detach from your machine, or a network-attached storage device, you know, just a hard drive plugged into your network. And then one that's off-site entirely, which I use pCloud for that, but whatever you want to do. That way, you know, you're pretty well protected against anything but such a major disaster that really the last thing you're going to think about are your pictures.
Well, that was the beauty when my one old Windows 7 machine there died. I got another Dell, came with Windows 10, and all I had to do was sign into Google. Boom. My email's there. All my documents are there. All my photos are there. And even to my banking, because I save all my QuickBooks file or Quicken file, and that goes up to the drive, Google Drive.
Yep.
Because everything else is in the Google format. As far as Word documents and spreadsheets.
Yep.
So I don't get charged for any of those, and I don't get charged, you know, for photos. That's all free, and I've got, I'd say, roughly close to 65,000 photos up there between me and my wife. You know, I mean, she stores a lot of stuff up there on hers, and together, you know, but I've got all my woodworking ones and everything else that are important to me, because after, and I know Steve can attest to this too, nothing worse when you own a shop and have people come in and say, you got to help me. I have all these photos of a loved one and I can't afford to lose them.
Yeah.
And it's like, sorry, but you did lose them.
Yep. We even see the people's voicemails with, you know, the last message their deceased, you know, parent had left them.
Right.
They'll keep that for posterity.
If you're in that situation, go to somebody and get that taken off of there now.
Yeah.
Backed up now. Don't wait.
Yeah, because it's not a matter if, it's a matter of when.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's exactly
when
right.
is it going to, because computers are like Russian roulette, folks. They're electronic. They're going to fail. Maybe not today, maybe 5 years down the road, but you don't know when. Because they don't give you a fair warning. All of a sudden, you go to turn it on one day, and it's like that light bulb. You turn it on in the room, and all of a sudden, it goes real bright, and then pop, and snaps.
And they always say it worked fine yesterday.
Yeah, well, and you're right, it did.
It did. Yeah, everything works fine until it doesn't.
Until it doesn't.
Yeah.
So, for example,
what did I do? Probably nothing.
Probably nothing. It's just life. So, for example, I'm looking at my dashboard, Google, myaccount.google.com/dashboard. Everybody has a dashboard, and I have 16,600 photos, well over 14,000 emails. I should probably
trim some of those out.
And I've got 14 voice messages. that I've specifically saved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get a lot of them, but the ones I've saved, my daughter wishing me good luck the day I went to get my master's thesis, to defend my master's thesis, and a couple of other, you know, birthday things and stuff like that. So,
How many photos did you say?
16,600.
146,108.
Yeah, I don't take as many as I used to. Right? Yeah, you're doing good. But that's the point. Yep. If you save them in the correct format, they do not count against your quota of storage.
Right.
So you can take as many photos as you want, keep them up there. And oh, by the way, it's Google. So you can search them.
For the content.
For the content.
Not just
I showed that to somebody one time. I said, okay, I'm going to type in red car, and a whole bunch of pictures came up with cars. And the guy pointed to a friend of mine standing in front of his car, and he said, no, this car is white. I said, well, if you look through the window, behind it is a red car. It will find faces and sort pictures by faces. And if you name one of those faces, then you can. So, for example, I can go in and just say Amelia, and I see all the Amelia pictures. And mm-hmm. I say, you know, Elaine, I see all the Elaine pictures. So you can do that easily enough. And, you know, my wife constantly, you know, we took a picture about 11 years ago of this. Do you think you could try finding that for me? Oh, I just sent it to you.
Yeah.
It's that easy. And you can share right from you can make albums of photos and share the albums with people. You can even do that print thing where you can print an album. They'll send you a printed album.
Or you can put it on a calendar.
Calendars, Christmas cards, whatever you want to do. Yeah. You can do all of that stuff from there. I've got 253 keep notes. I've got almost 400 contacts. Tens of thousands of files, playlists on Google Play Music, and all of those are up in the cloud. And anytime when my old Chromebook died and I bought a new Chromebook, mm-hmm. I signed in, and within a minute or two, stuff started popping up.
And the other thing, though, is you could be, say, over on the West Coast, say if your daughter was still in Arizona, you could go to Arizona, sign in on her machine to your Google account, and all your photos, your playlists, and everything else is there to access.
Yep.
Doesn't matter where you are, you sign into a Google account, and you've got complete access to all your files, information, and everything else.
And when I went to Arizona, well, my wife took a trip to Arizona while I was doing some stuff when I was still working, when I was doing a server room change. And she went to Arizona to do some stuff and started taking pictures. And, of course, I could follow right along. The picture showed up about 10 minutes later.
Yeah.
But, oh, well. Oh,
you could live with that.
I could follow along to what she was doing, where she was going, what she was seeing. Pictures were all immediately available, immediately shared. It was great.
We've had some interesting stories about people who forgot they were sharing photos when they were taking photos.
Uh-oh!
That's why I share albums and have to actively put the photos in the album for them, for other people to see them.
Wow.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's like the stories of people who send a photo to the wrong person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I didn't.
Well, they had one on YouTube. The guy's on the phone and going, oh, honey, I'm stuck in traffic. And she's right behind him and says, oh, that's funny. I see you right in front of me.
Yeah, right. So you can, depending on what it is you're saving and what it is you want to keep track of, there are lots of places on the web where you can save these things. Apple does it on iCloud.
Mm-hmm.
You only get 5 gigs of storage, but you can certainly store a decent amount of stuff there.
And you can pay for more if you need it.
And you can do that with Google. You can do that with Microsoft as well. And with a number of other companies. So there's nothing that stops you from backing up everything constantly. And I bought P Cloud for my wife and my daughter so that and I set it up on their machines, and now they never have to worry about it. Because, like you said, it's not if, it's when.
Yeah.
They're both on laptops. Those laptops are going to die.
It's guaranteed.
That's guaranteed. Yeah. And when it does...
At the worst possible moment.
At the worst possible moment. Yeah. And at that point, the only thing is I had to do a little extra work on my wife's because she saves things to the desktop. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. She's not listening, so I can say it. I grind my teeth when I see it. I've taught her now that when something is done, she takes it off her desktop. But while she's working on it, she puts it on her desktop.
Okay.
Okay, fine. Whatever you want to do is fine with me.
Well, like,
but I now back up her desktop.
Yeah.
Well, like Steve and I have both said, you know, we've seen clients come in with their computers and say they've got a 21-inch screen.
Yep.
And from the upper right-hand, left-hand corner down to the lower right-hand corner, there are tons of icons.
And then they ask, why does it boot so slow?
Exactly.
Well, that's why.
They got all this, they got one, these rows.
Yep.
All these PDF files, or when Word documents.
When it runs out of space and starts putting icons on top of the other icons.
Yeah.
You can make your, we'll sometimes tell people, you know, you can make the icons smaller so you can fit more of them on screen.
No, you don't tell them.
Wow, really?
No. I had a client that did do that.
But there is a smallest value and you can't get any smaller than that.
That's right, too. But you can also create a folder on your desktop.
And
yes, it's one more click, one more double click. Oh, well. But you can do that and there are lots of ways to save. I recommend. I specifically, like I said, recommend people, I recommend an online storage for all of your documents. Those of you who create most of your documents in Google Docs or in iDocs, iWork, what's it called now? This week, iWork,
They don't really use that brand name anymore, but yeah, the iWork suite.
Yeah, whatever they call it.
Pages, Keynote, and Numbers.
Yeah, and the same with the Microsoft. I think it's Office 365 this week, the online version of that. If you're saving documents online, that's the way to do it. But if you are still using a program that saves your documents on your desktop, back them up. Any of the programs that you see, take a look through them. Some of them will do automatic, instantaneous backups. That's one of the reasons I love pCloud. The minute something gets saved on my computer, it is automatically and instantaneously backed up to the web.
Mm-hmm.
Done.
Don't even have to think about it.
Yeah, and so I do that. And there's lots of programs that will do that stuff, so you should definitely be using one. You should be backing up without any question at all. You should be backing up. Really, there's nothing more heartrending than... Yeah, you lost everything.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
And the answer becomes, oh, well. There's nothing we can do about it.
Too bad, so sad.
Sometimes even after sending it out for the multi-$1,000 recovery, they still can't get anything.
Well, yeah. And that's just it. It costs you multiple thousands of dollars to just see if anything can be retrieved. That doesn't include the retrieval.
Mm-hmm. Right, and they don't guarantee.
And they don't guarantee it, but you will pay those multiple thousands of dollars instead of buying a hard drive for $100.
Yeah, $100, you can buy a terabyte or more.
Right, and then plugging it in and using that. I mean, what the hell? $175 for pCloud, I'll never have to buy more storage.
You can get small hard drives, laptop hard drives, in enclosures for around $120.
Yep.
And that includes the little case with a little switch on the front that you can turn it on, turn it off, and it plugs into a USB port.
We just found out the supplier we got our 1 terabyte drives from. They're gonna stop making 1 terabyte drives. They're too small.
Yeah.
So now
two terabytes
for $120. Yeah.
For $120, how do you beat that?
Well, that's why I got it.
It's ridiculous.
One of the LS drives. It hung that off my network.
Yep.
It's just another place I can back stuff up.
And once you've set it up automatically, you're done. You don't even have to think about it anymore.
No, it just automatically goes there.
Yep. And that's what I did for me and for my wife. My daughter doesn't live in our home, so I can't do that part for her.
Check that your backup has been running.
A lot of people we
hear say, well, yeah, I've got a backup. And then we look at it, well, it hasn't run in 6 months.
Right.
And that error message in the menu bar has been trying to tell you it hasn't run in 6 months.
Right. Read your error messages. Don't just keep clicking on them.
Yeah.
All right, I've got some news here. If you ask Verizon, they'll tell you gigabyte 5G is only possible with the power of seriously difficult to deploy and expensive mmWave technology. Recent tests of T-Mobile's fully live 5G mid-band network in New York City would like to have a word with Verizon on that point, though. Testers have begun cracking the gigabit barrier on some handsets. There are certainly asterisks to the 1.2 gigabit per second testers observed, but they're obvious ones. The network is very lightly burdened at present, and they were only able to get the very highest speeds using LTE 5G ENDC, dual connectivity mode. The biggest change in the last month to T-Mobile's 5G has been in increasing and widening deployments on the 2.5 gigahertz band. T-Mobile is now leveraging up to 60 megahertz of bandwidth in key markets like New York City and Philadelphia, and it's paying off in a big way. While these figures are on a network with very, very few active connections and during a time of particularly low cellular congestion, they speak volumes about mid-band 5G's promise. Even if a fully loaded T-Mobile mid-band network offered speeds that were just 20% of what's been observed here, they'd still have it hovering around 200 megabits per second. That's far faster than typical American home broadband network and about six times as fast as typical U.S. LTE coverage. The potential upshot here for those who are for those on the larger two U.S. networks would be pricing, though. If AT&T and T-Mobile feel if AT&T and Verizon feel that T-Mobile's competitiveness on network is starting to really cut into their postpaid subscribers, the likelihood they'll react with promotions and discounts increases substantially. At that point, the ball is in T-Mobile's court, and as a company, it's never been shy about cutting prices if it means growing the business. So perhaps we'll see a bit of a coronavirus wireless price war this fall. AT&T and Verizon will have to wait until December to plan their next 5G moves, when the FCC will auction 300 megahertz of the C-band, prime mid-band real estate. Even then, it means the resulting network deployments won't get underway until Q1 2021 at the very earliest. And it remains unclear how or if Verizon and AT&T will be able to get compatible handsets out the door fast enough. By spring of 2021, T-Mobile will be on the second generation of mid-band handsets. AT&T and Verizon probably won't get their first ones until summer and realistically won't see any significant adoption until fall of 2021 with the iPhone. This gives T-Mobile a truly enviable amount of runway to work with as its mid-band network scales and its competitors are essentially left with their hands tied behind their backs. All in all, it seems the stage is set for the new T-Mobile to become a much bigger player in the U.S. wireless landscape, and its progress should have AT&T and Verizon worried. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Meenick Francesco, and you, 30 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, hey, it's sound bites.
Could be.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go. Even as we consider revelations, Facebook shelved internal research suggesting its algorithms generate divisiveness, Apple has been forced to reject damaging claims against its contact tracing tech currently spreading on Facebook. Numerous hysterical myths concerning the Apple-Google contact tracing technology are being circulated on Facebook. A series of posts claim the exposure notification feature inside iOS 13.5 will allow authorities to track people's location and monitor who they meet, which is precisely what it tries not to do. Not only that, but both Apple and Google have barred governments from harvesting GPS data or requiring, it doesn't even do GPS, or requiring users to share personal information when using the app. In order to work, the solution relies on random Bluetooth identifiers shared between devices. This information forms a record of proximity but does not include location data. So it knows who I was near but not where we were when we were near each other. When they announced their work, Apple and Google promised that any apps using the technology must require users to consent before sharing a positive test result and the keys associated with their devices with the public health authority. Users should also be able to turn off exposure notifications at any time. Apple and Google are attempting to create a contact tracing solution that gathers as little personal information as possible and have previously promised to delete the feature once the current crisis has passed. The intention of the tech is that the government or health authorities can use the API to build apps with which to monitor the disease outbreak. Contact tracing is seen as a way to help control the pandemic. The information should warn people when they have been exposed to the diseases. This could enable life to return to something a little more like business as usual, while also saving lives, though the efficiency is limited if people refuse to use the apps. Apple and Google both released APIs for their technology earlier this month. These are designed to make it possible for both Android and iOS devices to work together for contact tracing using officially sanctioned government apps. The two companies are also developing a broader Bluetooth-based contact tracing platform for building this functionality into the underlying platforms. Apple and Google have said 23 countries and several U.S. states have requested access to its APIs. The first app to make use of the Apple-Google API has appeared in Switzerland with a Latvian initiative not far behind. That's Latvian, not Latvarian, so it's not Dr. Doom. There are some governments who want to gather all the information for analysis on servers they control, but the Apple-Google model does not enable this. Instead, analysis takes place on the device. So will you be using a contact tracing app? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
The scary thing is that our phones could be used to do that, and we hear that in some countries they are, but both Apple and Google have gone out of their way to make sure it can't happen.
That's exactly right. The whole idea behind this is it uses Bluetooth to say, for example, if I've got it on my phone and Steve has it on his phone, it'll say Steve and I were within 6 feet of each other. It won't say where. It won't even say it's Steve and Nick. It will say, you know, ID ABCD.
Two individuals.
Right. ID 4531 or whatever the numbers are. And then if 4531 tests positive, I'll get a notice that someone I was near, not Steve Ray, just someone I was near tested positive, I should get tested. That's the full extent of what these contact tracing.
Not the other conspiracy theories.
Anybody who believes that stuff is a little bit wet-brained. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Patrick from Batavia, New York. Hiya, Patrick. What's up?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Great. Finally, had to get my Chromebook because my Chrome OS just kind of, all of a sudden the screen vanished. And I couldn't see anything, so I thought this is the time to upgrade.
Yep.
And here's the situation. You guys are talking about how you're supposed to save files, like in documents and all this. I don't do it.
Okay.
That way. What I do, and there's a reason I'm explaining this to you, because I have a problem with Chrome. So with Windows, I have, let's say I have three hobbies. I play tennis. I collect stamps, and I have health or financial information. So I would create folders for tennis, health, and financial.
Sure.
And then I would put all my documents under there. See, I don't just want to put my spreadsheets in one place, my documents. I want to put them all in the same folder. Okay, that works great for Windows. Now I come to Chromebook, and I would appreciate if you could help me adjust my mindset. Because I know it's not, I'm sure it's me, how I think about it. Can you give me some insights on how I can think about it differently so that I can make Chromebook work for me? I just kind of put it there and hope I can find it.
Well, so you're saving things on your Chromebook itself, not in the web anywhere?
Nick, I'm not going to pretend I know for sure. Okay, maybe just give me a couple things to look at, and I'll take my time and go over it after. You can say them all quickly because I can listen afterwards because I won't be able to absorb it as fast as you can say it. But I'll study this, but I just need a whole, I think I need a different thought process.
Okay,
I still
so
want to keep them
it should
in
work
their
the same way.
Folders, so I don't have to go hunting around for them.
All right, so that it depends sense? On it depends on what program you're using to say write your documents. Whether they're documents or spreadsheets or whatever, but whatever programs you use determines how they're going to be saved. So for example, if you use Google Docs, you're going to be saving them in the cloud. If you okay. use LibreOffice, if you've bought, say, for example, a 4 or better yet, 8 gig Chromebook, and you can run the Linux thing, and you can install LibreOffice, then you can save them on, for example, an SD card that you plug into the side of the device.
Okay, before you go on, could I just address what you just said there?
Sure.
Okay. Now, and then there's another complication. Let's do this one because you brought that up. Let's say I do a spreadsheet about health, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I said spreadsheet, so it's a spreadsheet, so it's Google Sheets. Now, how do I get it in the folder so that it'll be with all my other health?
What actions? Program are you using to write that spreadsheet?
I'm sorry?
What program are you using to create that spreadsheet?
Google Docs.
Okay. So in Google Docs, you can create folders. And then what you do is the easiest way to do it is to actually go into your health folder and then say new spreadsheet. And it will automatically be created in the health folder.
Or you can save the document afterwards into the health folder. It should work exactly.
It works either way.
It works the same on Windows as on Mac.
Folder
yeah.
in the cloud, right?
Yes, exactly. In Google Docs, in the Google Cloud.
Okay.
In Drive, Google Drive.
A little twist on it. There's a lot of things that I download, like I'll download spreadsheets and I'll download documents.
Okay.
How do I get them?
Well, that's equally as easy. You go into Drive, and then you go into your whichever folder you want them in, and then you just upload them into that folder. And you can do that. The easiest way to do that, quite honestly, is to drag and drop.
Yeah, open the folder and drop them into it.
Yep.
I have two windows open, one that has your Google Docs, and then, say, another Windows file where the documents reside on your computer. You select all those and just drag them across and drop them into the Google folder.
Or, again, once you go into your health folder, you can say new. There's a big new button. And one of the choices under new is file upload.
Okay, maybe I'm not saying this quite clearly. Let's say I went to a website and it said, here's a file you can use. So I want to save it from that website. How do I get it from the website to the Google Drive?
It depends on the website. Some of them let you save directly to Google Drive. Some of them you have to download it to your Chromebook and then upload it to Google Drive. And that's entirely dependent on the other website.
All right. Okay, good. I'm going to probably have to go back and listen to this after. But just one comment on what Dave has mentioned a few times about what you need to back up.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd say that I disagree, but I maybe just an addition. He says you don't need to back up the program. I download a lot of programs, so they're in my downloaded file. So if I didn't have those and I lost all my files, I wouldn't have those because the only place they are is on my computer.
Yeah, but you did.
Well, you
have to back up any programs that you downloaded.
Well, that's just the installer. That's the installer. That's not the actual program. And if you need to reinstall a program, you're better off downloading the current version than you are to use an old download.
Yep.
In fact, most systems are now offering to delete your download folder. After you install the program, it will say, do you want to delete the installer? Because you don't need the installer anymore. You can always re-download it.
Along with your backup, you should be making a list of the programs that you use. And then that way you can install fresh, current versions of that program and then put your data back. But instead of wasting the time,
But yeah, there's kind of a one off, and they said this is good, and so I'll download it.
Yeah, there's no problem in backing up your downloads. You can always re-download things again if you ever need to.
Yeah, right, but if you do back up your downloads,
it might be worthwhile backing up your downloaded programs.
If you want to, you certainly can. But most of the time, when you install them, the first thing it'll ask you to do is upgrade anyway.
Yeah, and your downloads folder is usually in your user folder. So by backing up your user folder, you pretty much get everything.
Right, you back it up anyway. Yeah. All right, Patrick, we got to move on.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for your help out. Like I said, I appreciate it very much.
Thanks,
and I'm a member too.
That's what we love to hear, Patrick. You know that. Thank you. The interesting thing about Chromebooks, Google Drive, is that you can create folders and all that other stuff, but of course it's Google. So you can also search for a name or a word inside a document or whatever you want and find them that way. So it's very flexible that way. Okay, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Brighton, New York. Hi, Joe. What's up?
Hi. Problem with my Mac Mini. I have a new DVD drive, and I can't get it to accept anything. I went to the preferences here, and under CDs and DVDs, there's a list of things of what to do and whatnot. And it said when you insert a picture CD or video CD, it says ignore, and I can't get out of that ignore.
Can you change? You can't pull down the menu to change that to say open? There should be an open with about what program you want to open it with.
It just when I try to pull that down, it just highlights ignore as checked.
But you can pull it down and see other options, but you can't pick them?
I can't even pull down options next to this.
Huh.
I've got to find where that preference is. Basically, you want to delete the preference file that remembers that you said ignore.
Right.
Oh.
Just got to find where that preference file is and what it's called.
Okay.
It would be somewhere in your preferences folder. I don't know if it's called ignore list or actually, it might be in the Finder preferences. Probably is, because the Finder is the program that makes your desktop.
Okay.
So you go to your preferences folder in your home folder library, and there should be a com.apple.finder. I'm going to find what the name of it is. Yeah, com.apple.finder, because it's the opposite of a URL.
Right.
I see.
So by deleting that preference file, the next time, and then reboot the computer, it will make a new one with all the default preferences, and then you can insert a disk, and it will ask you again what you want to do with it.
I see. Okay.
There isn't a little padlock icon in there, is there, that you have to unlock to authenticate with your password before you can make a change?
No. There's no lock icon at all.
I know. Some of the preferences do need to be unlocked.
I see. Yeah. Okay. So I'll follow this up, and I'll go to your afterward. I'll go to the archive and re-listen again a few times to try to get into the senile brain.
And believe me, we all get that. Believe me, and that's why we put up the archives.
Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yep. Bye-bye. The archives are up there. You can get to them from the Soundbites website, soundbites.org, bites with a Y, and it's right across the top, archives. So you can see those. I recently redid the page, so it's a little
cleaner.
More compact and a little cleaner, yeah. So you can see that. Where is it? Oh, you have to scroll down on the right.
You should put a sequential number on it so we can brag about how many thousand there are in there.
I was just thinking I should count them and put that list right at the top.
Yeah.
You know, X number. It's under, if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, it's the second choice there, the full audio archives. And when you go to that, you'll see the many, 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 many archives we've got going all the way back to 2001. December of 2001, Space Odyssey. And yeah, they're all there. God bless the folks who are my provider, web provider. I'm paying for unlimited storage, and doggone it, I'm using it.
Taking full advantage of it.
That's why I also might as well take this moment to appreciate all the folks who go to the website and click that little donate button for Sound Bites, which is separate from the Jazz 90.1 donation, because that money helps me pay for all that unlimited storage.
I was just arguing with myself, why don't I see that option on my preferences, because I don't have a DVD player plugged in. There's no DVD player plugged in, so it doesn't show me that option.
Yeah. Well, that's reasonable.
Yeah.
Duh.
Exactly. Yeah, but I want to get back for a moment. I really think I'm going to have to buy one of those
Raspberry Pis.
The fours with 8 gig of RAM. Got to buy that active cooling case.
And you know what else you need for it?
What?
A Nexton 7-inch screen.
I bought my daughter, God love her, I bought my daughter a 24-inch monitor. And I swear I didn't do this on purpose, but I bought two of them. So I've got a 24-inch monitor that I should put something on, and it might as well be that.
What I'm thinking is with the Raspberry Pi, you get a 7-inch screen. You've got a 3D printer. You can create a case.
I've thought about that, too. The cases are up there. If you go to Yagi or one of those.
Oh, there's so many of them out there that people have it. So it's like a 45-degree angle. And you just take the lid off the back, and that's where the Raspberry Pi sits.
Yep.
And it's got a separate area where they put the cooling fans and everything else. Oh, yeah, I've already checked those out. I made my one little case. I showed you that one. Yep. And that's got a 4.5-inch screen on it that I do my DMR on. And that's just a Raspberry Pi Zero running. But, the 4 does look...
And it's only $75. I mean, by the time you got to buy a power supply, that's $35. And
You can get kits.
Well, right. Yeah. But you know, you got to buy the thing. You got to buy the power supply. You got to buy a case. I get that. But still, what you end up with is a mid-power
computer
for $150. I don't know how you beat that.
No, you can't. And you can. The thing of it is you can play around with it, and you're not going to break anything.
That's right. If you do damage something with that, it's
erase the SD card,
start again,
reformat it,
you're done.
And put it back on. And especially if you've got the image already saved over on another computer,
right. And that's what you do. That music tells me we're done for another week. Time sure flies when you're having fun. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everybody who called in. I particularly want to thank everybody for not piling in at the last minute. I always feel bad when we can't get to everybody, but we didn't have to worry about that this week. But you know what? Put us on your list. We'll be back here next week. Same bat time, same bat channel, with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Sound Bites, and the truly great and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours. Be kind to each other and be well.